It's Wednesday, September 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Pope Francis begins his first full day in the United States with a visit to the White House. Critics of Chinese President Xi Jinping protest his arrival in Seattle, Washington. We speak with a human rights campaigner.
It's absolutely true that it's a big and complicated relationship, and so there are a lot of topics vying for attention. We certainly think that both the deterioration of the rights situation in China under Xi merits special attention.
An American baseball legend dies, and we look at the career of singer Nick Jonas. It's all ahead. Pope Francis spends his first full day in the United States Wednesday. The pontiff was greeted by U.S. President Barack Obama and his family when he arrived Tuesday at Joint Base Andrews outside of Washington following 3 days in Cuba. I spoke with VOA religion correspondent Jerome Sokolowski about the pope's visit.
He'll go to the White House. He will canonize a saint, a Spanish missionary, who established missions out in California. He'll do that here in Washington. And he will address Congress as well in Washington. And then he goes on, of course, there's much more in this trip in New York and Philadelphia as well.
Yes, and actually after he leaves D.C., is he then in New York City?
Then he goes to New York City. The main event there is his address at the U.N. General Assembly. And it seems President Obama will be there. As well, he'll be at Madison Square Garden and make a trip across Central Park. The biggest part of the trip, though, I mean, you might already be out of breath by hearing all of this, but will be his appearance in Philadelphia in the weekend. He won't meet superpower leaders there, but the three biggest events of this trip will be in Philadelphia. He'll have a huge mass in the middle of the city. He'll speak at Independence Hall, and he will also make an appearance at a big world meeting of families that's expecting around 1 million people.
And this, I believe, is his first visit to the United States.
This is his first visit to the United States as Pope and also as a person. He's never come here before. And he has, I think there is some significance to that, that he doesn't see, or at least until now, he hasn't seen the U.S. as really being the center of the world. To him, the important parts of the world are the peripheries, people in poorer countries, people who are normally neglected. And that's been the emphasis of this papacy so far.
All right. Thanks very much. That's VOA religion correspondent Jerome Sokolowski.
Thank you, Sarah.
Almost one-third of American Roman Catholics are Hispanic. According to a new Pew Research Center study, Hispanics are also leaving the faith at a high rate. In 2010, 67% of Hispanic Americans identified as Catholic, but in 2013, that figure dropped to 55%. Daniela Schreier visited a predominantly Hispanic church that's following the Pope's method for keeping the faithful committed to their religion.
Even on a weekday afternoon, the midday Spanish language mass at St. Elizabeth Church brings the faithful. More than half of all Hispanic Americans identify as Catholic. Many of this church's parishioners are new immigrants from predominantly Catholic countries in Latin America. Nearly 90% of Hispanic Americans have a favorable opinion of Pope Francis, who will be visiting the city late this month. Sister Celia Cid says the Pope, who is a son of immigrants, understands their needs.
He's a son of immigrants, so he identifies with the struggles of many different nationalities, different countries, and what they are going through. There is a great hope for me, for him to come, because this is like a melting pot. This is a city built on the immigrants.
But nearly a quarter of Hispanic Americans are now former Catholics. Some leave for evangelical and Pentecostal churches, while others simply drift away from the Catholic Church. Father Ambiorix Rodriguez, an immigrant from the Dominican Republic, was raised in the Manhattan community where he now preaches. He says Pope Francis has a solution. The pontiff has advised his spiritual leaders to go out and connect beyond the confines of the church building.
We can no longer stay inside, self-enclosed, just worrying about, you know, who we have, who's here. But no, the church needs to go out.
The departure of many Hispanics from the church is most pronounced among the young. Today, many under the age of 30 classify themselves as unaffiliated. But the Pope's openness invigorates young parishioner Elias.
If the Catholics that have drifted away were based on, you don't understand me, or it's too complicated, or I'm tired of the old traditional habits, well, the Pope is actually saying, you know what, I am moving forward.
Elias said the Pope's use of social media to connect with the next generation is one way he is keeping young people invested and interested.
The youth are the future of tomorrow. They're the ones that are going to keep this church alive, and they're keeping the church alive. So that's where it starts, to be honest. It's the youth, because if the youth are not being influenced or not being moved by it, you're going to lose a lot of members.
Daniela Schreier, VOA News, New York.
Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what is the reaction on social media to the Pope's visit?
Oh, it's just huge. I mean, it's everyone's talking about it, it seems, here in D.C. and across the U.S., really. The big trending hashtag is hashtag Pope in D.C., and a lot of people are using that to track the Pope's movements. He's already landed at Andrews Air Force Base and went off to the Vatican Embassy here in Washington, just a very brief public appearance thus far. But already people are talking about the fiat that he came in on and saying that that's his little bit of Rome that he's bringing here to the U.S. People this morning are taking pictures of the Metro and tweeting them out. I know our Jim Fry here at VOA has had some pictures he tweeted out and said it's practically, you know, empty. There's maybe a few people. A lot of people are teleworking to avoid a lot of the congestion and crowds. The roads are being shut down. So a lot of talk about the logistics and the roads being shut down, but also a lot of excitement as well. Another one of our reporters here at VOA has been at the White House, said that people started getting there at 1 o'clock this morning for the Pope's parade that he's going to come through in his Popemobile at around 11 a.m. So 10 hours before that happens, they've already been getting there and taking pictures. One of the other pictures here being shared a lot is that when you go into the White House grounds, you can't have any kind of food or drink. So garbage cans overflowing with coffee cups and people. So it's interesting because there's a lot of excitement for the Pope. A lot of talk about the Pope himself, but also you have these kind of secondary and tertiary elements that we get to see, these, you know, the coffee cups overflowing or the security barriers, those kind of things. But it's going to be, you know, the talk of the town for the next few days that he's here, and certainly the talk on social media.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the other big trending topic today, aside from the Pope, is today's the first day of fall. So hashtag first day of fall is trending. A lot of people sharing pictures of the leaves changing here in the U.S., wondering when things are going to start to cool down. I know here in D.C. it's cooled down a bit from the summer heat that we've had. And then people excited about some things that you can only get during fall, namely pumpkin spice everything, it seems, is flavored with pumpkin spice lattes, pumpkin spice cookies, coffee
pumpkin
creamer.
Pumpkin bread.
Pumpkin spice bread, everything. So a lot of people excited for the food. And it's getting close to the holiday season in the U.S. We're about 2 months away from the U.S. holiday of Thanksgiving, so a lot of people looking forward to that. Start of the football season that comes with fall. So just a lot of excitement about that as well. So a good time to be in the U.S. between the Pope and the start of fall. It's a good day here in the U.S. on social media.
Okay. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky, and this is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Like the character Pigpen from the Charles Scholes Peanuts cartoon, who had a cloud of dust over his head everywhere he walked, we're each surrounded by our own personal cloud of microbes. Every day, millions of bacteria that live on or in our bodies are released into the air around us. Researchers from the University of Oregon collected samples of air that surrounded 11 test subjects. The researchers sequenced the DNA of bacteria contained within the air samples. They said they were able to identify most of the test subjects by a distinctive combination of microbes that made an individual's microbial cloud unique. The researchers believe that their findings could provide insight and an understanding of the processes behind the spread of contagious disease within buildings or other closed spaces. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, an American baseball legend dies at the age of 90. Chinese President Xi Jinping is calling for better relations with Washington to help prevent what he said would be disastrous conflict between the two nations as he begins his week-long tour of the United States. The comments came Tuesday during a much-anticipated policy speech to business leaders in Seattle, the first stop on a trip that will culminate later this week with the Chinese leader's first state visit to the White House. The Chinese leader also addressed a wide range of other issues that have upset U.S.-China ties, including cyber hacking, which President Barack Obama has said will figure prominently in their one-on-one talks. On his arrival Tuesday in Seattle, Washington, Chinese President Xi Jinping was met with Tibetan and Falun Gong demonstrators, including Tibet activist Jampa Zhonghang, who described the security situation in the region.
Well, it has become harsher, unfortunately. You know, as you know, he has become ever more powerful. They say that since Deng Xiaoping, you know, he's become so powerful. As you know, he's trying to root out corruption in China. Well, that's another story, whether he's really rooting out corruption or is it a political game they're playing. They're trying to get rid of the enemy within their power ranking. That's besides the question, you know. But he has become ever more powerful, and the clampdown in Tibet has become even more stronger right now.
The Chinese government views the Tibetan spiritual leader, the Dalai Lama, as a violent separatist. Ahead of Mr. Xi's first state visit to Washington Friday, Human Rights Watch has called on President Obama to meet with independent civil society representatives, insisting that defending human rights, which it says are under assault by President Xi's leadership, should be a top priority. Sophie Richardson, China director at Human Rights Watch, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, China is in the midst of the toughest crackdown in years aimed at civil society activists.
I think if you look just at the month of July, for example, when in the space of about 2 weeks, more than 250 human rights lawyers and legal activists in 19 different provinces got detained by local authorities in a very coordinated sweep. Now, most of those people were promptly let go, but there was a very clear message sent that they should cease that kind of work. And the fact that roughly two dozen of those people remain detained completely outside of any sort of reasonable legal procedure, I think reinforces the length to which Xi's leadership is willing to go to shut down criticism and even prevent people from using legally protected avenues to advocate for redress.
What is the status of some new security laws that could have impact on rights in China?
Well, one of the laws, a draft of which was introduced early in 2015, is the counterterrorism law, which, you know, envisions very broad powers for the state and virtually no ability for individuals accused of violating that law to defend themselves. That seems to have triggered a lot of concern internationally and so seems to have been backburned. But that has not slowed the Chinese government from adopting over the summer a national security law that's equally problematic or from proposing a draft cybersecurity law that is particularly relevant in Seattle because it would oblige foreign tech companies to share source codes and provide backdoors, essentially make international tech companies complicit in surveillance and censorship.
Apparently, this is a big enough issue where the White House on Tuesday hosted a group of non-governmental organizations who face some new restrictions under these security laws.
Yeah, the law that prompted the discussion at the White House today is a draft law on the management of foreign NGOs. It hasn't yet been adopted, but it certainly prompted an unusually broad outcry from business, from academia, from charities and foundations, because it would essentially make international NGOs operating in China or providing funding to domestic NGOs subject to a lot of the same kinds of scrutiny and restrictions that domestic NGOs already have to put up with. And our main concern is that if this law is adopted, it would effectively end or make impossible funding to some of the most progressive NGOs that are providing human rights-related services or legal aid.
Are you concerned that the matter of human rights will be overshadowed by other weighty issues that confront the leaders of the U.S. and China?
Well, it's absolutely true that it's a big and complicated relationship, and so there are a lot of topics vying for attention. We certainly think that both the deterioration of the rights situation in China under Xi merits special attention. We also try to remind people that, you know, the same laws and independent institutions in China that would better protect human rights, like an independent court system, respect for the freedom of expression, is also essential to a healthy trade relationship, a better diplomatic partnering, and many other aspects of the relationship. So it's not sort of a boutique issue off in the corner. We see it as fundamental to securing a host of U.S. interests.
That's Sophie Richardson of Human Rights Watch. Meanwhile, the state-run China Daily Wednesday denounced U.S. arrogance on the issue, citing America's own endless domestic human rights challenges and call for dialogue over confrontation. Famed baseball player Yogi Berra has died at the age of 90. The former New York Yankees catcher died at his home in New Jersey on Tuesday. He played in more World Series than any other player in the major leagues. He was famous for his sayings, such as, "It ain't over till it's over." The son of Italian immigrants, Berra also served in the U.S. Navy during World War II. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Singer Nick Jonas is out with a new single called Levels. It comes off a CD set to be released next year. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Border Crossings host Larry London about the song and Nick Jonas's career, which started at Disney with his older brothers Kevin and Joe.
They became famous on Disney, working with Demi Lovato. They appeared in the film Camp Rock and Camp Rock 2, and they were the it group until a difference of opinion led to their breakup, and then they went in separate directions. They're from Texas, and originally the group started to be the backup group for brother Joe Jonas. But it ended up being a very pop-oriented band. All the young girls fell in love with what they did. They were on tour with Miley Cyrus, and Nick was dating Miley for a little while. Then he went on to date Selena Gomez. So he's had quite a storied romance, shall we say, in the music business.
And this particular song is the first single off of the new album, is it not?
No, it's the third single.
Is this the third one?
The other two songs are Chains and Jealous.
Okay.
He hasn't released the album yet. He's kind of been tossing ideas about the album around, and he was also thinking about re-releasing his very first album, which he thought we'd rework some music. I was just watching an interview with him where he said he can't really define his sound. He just kind of knows that this is where he is today, and this is what he's created, and people asked him, what is your sound? He said, I don't know, I do what I do. And it's kind of a mixture of pop and, you know, dance and hip-hop, a little combination of everything.
Get on my elevator, baby, we're going up. Give me that now and later, I can't get enough.
And speaking of dance, his brother Joe, who you said was they used to be the backup group for, has got his own group, DNCE, which is really a dance-oriented group. That's their sound. They're more into club and electric dance music than Nick. Nick, this is more... It's almost like Justin Bieber's kind of flavor.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe him. I know that the sound that he's created for his latest album is doing very, very well, very popular. Nickelodeon gave him a Kids' Choice Award for Best Male Artist this year, and he's nominated for the MTV Award for Europe in Milan, Italy, coming up for the, it's the Best U.S. Act. So he's in the category of Best U.S. Act.
Wow. That's a pretty big category.
That's a big title.
That is, if he wins that one. And now, you mentioned that he is kind of going more towards a unique sound. He's defined his sound as kind of a mixture of R&B and a little bit of dance and a little bit of pop. So it's a little bit of everything.
Yes. And he does, you know, a great job with what he does. And he seems to have the whole package. In fact, he is now doing a lot of acting stuff. He's on the Scream Queens new TV show. He's going to have a reoccurring role. He was seen on set with long hair and a beard when they were filming his episode this past week, as a matter of fact. He's also got another film, a big screen film coming out called Goat. He appears in that as well. So he's very busy with his acting as well as his music.
All right. Well, if you want to learn more about Nick Jonas, you can always ask Larry by sending a tweet to @VOAMusic. Or you can hit him up on Border Crossings, his Facebook page. And if you want to hear Border Crossings, you can tune into our webpage. That's voanews.com. Hey.
That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The loss of government control in countries such as Yemen, Syria, Libya, Iraq, and Nigeria's northeast is one of the factors leading to the emergence of radical and extremist terrorist groups, namely Al-Qaeda affiliates and ISIL. The United States, said U.S. Ambassador at Large and Coordinator for Counterterrorism, Tina Cadenow, has stressed the need to diversify its approach to counterterrorism and to partner with other countries. One of the most serious aspects of the terrorist threat is the new phenomenon of foreign terrorist fighters traveling to conflict zones, most prominently Iraq and Syria. Another aspect to the threat is the potential for lone offender attacks by those who have been radicalized but remain in their home countries. Since the conflict in Syria and Iraq began, more than 25,000 foreign terrorist fighters from more than 100 countries have traveled to that region. There are reportedly over 250 Americans who have traveled or attempted to travel to Iraq and Syria to fight with ISIL and Al-Qaeda since 2012. While the numbers are troubling, the global community has mobilized to address the threat more effectively. The U.S. now has information-sharing agreements with over 40 international partners to identify and track the travel of suspected terrorists and is working on others. The U.S. is also encouraging its partners to increase security at their borders to better identify, restrict, and report travel of suspected foreign terrorist fighters. Ultimately, however, said Ambassador Cadenow, we need to do more than identify and stop foreign terrorist fighters from arriving at their destination. We have to prevent them from getting into these pipelines in the first place. To address this, the U.S. is working with partners both inside and outside of the government to increase outreach to youth, women, and victims in order to address the conditions that make communities susceptible to violent extremism. The best way to ultimately defeat terrorist organizations like ISIL is by expanding partnerships, building bilateral and regional capabilities, and promoting rule of law-based approaches to counterterrorism and violent extremism.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.